Good morning, this is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Viewing and using animals as commodities is nothing new. From the fur trade to trophy hunting, from whaling to the wholesale farming of animals as food and leather, our relationship to our fellow animals has historically often been one of exploitation.
There are still many ways today that our global economy relies on the systemic confinement and mistreatment of animals, but old attitudes are changing. A new, more humane business model is replacing the old, and our next guest argues that it's better not just for the animals, but for the businesses themselves.
Wayne Pacelli is president of the Humane Society of the United States. His newest book, The Humane Economy, Animal Protection 2.0, makes the case that consumer awareness of animal welfare has caused many businesses to rethink their practices, while consumer demand for humanely sourced products has increased the bottom line of the businesses that provide them.
Pacelli will be in Milwaukee tonight, speaking at Boswell Book Company, but he joins me on the line now to explain why the time was right for this book.
I think we're really at an incredible moment of change in our human relationship with animals. There are so many advances that are occurring with corporations paying attention to animal welfare, lawmakers paying attention, documentaries, books, so many different expressions of culture and creativity. Scientists telling us about how animals are intelligent, have feelings, have emotions. And I wanted to kind of bundle this together and point people in the right direction broadly on this issue, but also say we've made a lot of progress and that this past progress is an indicator of the progress that we can see in the years ahead. And really, we've talked about the moral case for animals, that human beings have all this power over animals, that we should be decent to them, we should be merciful, we should really try to restrain ourselves when it comes to exploiting animals. But I also wanted to layer in that it's good for us as individuals, it's good for us as business owners, it's good for the whole of our economy. You know, you think of Ringling Brothers, just to take a very practical example. I mean, so many of us thought about the circus when we were kids. You know, our parents may have taken us to the circus. We do so because we want to see the animals at some level. We want to be entertained. But the backstory is that these elephants are on chains 22 hours a day. They're shuttled to 150 cities a year. It's a life of misery. And when the public began to realize that, it was no longer in Ringling Brothers' economic interest to continue this. And on May 1st of this year, they ended the use of elephants in traveling acts because they recognized that it was viewed as unpopular, and it was also viewed as inhumane. And that is the humane economy forming, where we shed cruel practices, and now a business like this can move to human acrobatics, it can do other creative things with technology, or other circuses like Cirque du Soleil have no animals at all, yet fill stadiums and arenas. We can really progress beyond exploiting animals and have a new commercial set of activities that are prosperous for us as individuals and for companies, but don't leave a trail of animal victims in our wake.
When did that change? When did we stop, or at least some people stopped thinking about animals as commodities and start thinking about them as a fellow, you know, denizens of this planet?
Well, you know, I've been CEO of the Humane Society of the United States for about 12 years, but I've been involved for nearly 30 years. I started as a volunteer. I started an animal protection organization at my college as an undergraduate. And I really think 30 years ago in the mid-80s when I was an undergraduate, you know, there were many shelters, a great organization like the Wisconsin Humane Society that's been around for decades, or other groups that have been around that have done important things for sheltering animals, spaying and neutering, you know, instilling an attitude of kindness and compassion. But in talking about taking on the big problems, the issue of factory farming, the issue of trophy hunting of wolves or African lions, or the issue of horse slaughter, or the issue of cosmetic testing on animals, you know, even in the 80s, the animal protection movement was almost viewed as a protest movement. It was a little bit viewed as on the margins, not in the mainstream. I think we've squarely moved into the mainstream. You know, in the last 10 months, we've had 200 of the biggest food retailers in the country, Walmart, McDonald's, Burger King, Cracker Barrel, almost every big name you can think of in food service, grocery, fast food, they've all said we're going to phase out our purchasing of eggs from farms that confine the hens. And we're only going to source our eggs from operations that keep the animals in cage-free living environments. I mean, this is in the last 10 months. Before that, there were almost no big name brands, just Whole Foods, a well-known retailer, but, you know, viewed as more green and viewed as more animal welfare friendly. They had done it, you know, several years ago. But now to see this entire movement, to see these entertainment companies like SeaWorld say they're going to stop breeding orcas and Ringling's going to stop using elephants and traveling acts, to see hundreds of companies say, we're going to stop animal testing for cosmetics, we're going to embrace alternatives, to see 45 airlines after Cecil the lion was shot by a Minnesota trophy hunter last July say, we're not going to ship in the cargo holds African lion trophies, nor are we going to ship elephant trophies, leopard trophies, rhino trophies, or Cape Buffalo trophies. That is an incredible sea change in how corporations view this issue. And what we're seeing is similar changes in the realm of politics and culture. And, you know, as my book is out there, The Humane Economy, there are other books talking about animal intelligence and consciousness, one after another, documenting with science how animals think and feel. And now there's no rebuttal on the other side. When I started as an animal advocate in the 80s, there was a big rebuttal. A lot of people denied that animals were intelligent. They denied they had feelings. I mean, it seems absurd to us today, but that was the state of the discourse 25 or 30 years ago. It's just been a sea change. I'd really peg it to the last 5 or 10 years, in particular the last 5 years for us.
Is appealing to the business bottom line a way to do this? It seems, I mean, that's part of what the book talks about, is you talk about disruption of business practices. And I assume that by disruption, you mean not protests necessarily, but sort of getting people to rethink how they approach making money.
Yes, and I think for so many years, adhering to animal protection values was viewed as requiring sacrifice. That, you know, if we as individuals, you know, wanted to think about our food choices, it would be a sacrifice. If companies, you know, were going to do the more humane thing and source animal products from more humane farms, well, that was going to cost them more. Now, I really think, and this is one of the reasons why I wrote The Humane Economy, is that animal protection is not so much about sacrifice, it's about opportunity. It's better for us as individuals when we do the right thing, when we show our humanity and our decency and our compassion to other creatures. But when corporations like Walmart and McDonald's say, hey, you know, we're going to try to eliminate some of the risk to our brand by not being associated with factory farms that make a routine practice of confining animals so severely they cannot turn around. I mean, in what world is that okay for us to have a pig in a crate where she can't even turn around for 3 years of her life, or to have 6 or 8 laying hens jammed into a small cage about the size of a microwave where they're jammed shoulder to shoulder and they can barely move for the 12 or 18 months they're alive? I mean, somehow that became acceptable. Somehow that became tolerated. For the most part, we were so physically removed from it that that's the singular reason why it was tolerated, because we didn't know what was going on. Now we know, in the era of social media and so much information exchange with animal organizations like the Humane Society of the United States doing undercover investigations, throwing back the curtain, we know too much to be in denial anymore, and people of conscience are taking action. And now businesses realize that it's a brand risk to do the wrong thing, and it's a brand opportunity to do the right thing on animal welfare. Those companies that don't migrate are really in jeopardy, and that, you know, it's no longer about sacrifice. It's really about opportunity. It's about animal protection as a universal value. And that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, and you're going to really face a comeuppance in some way.
Do you hope that if people adopt this, if businesses adopt this viewpoint, that the bottom line is all well and good and wonderful, but that they'll eventually become more aware of animals and animal welfare from that ethical standpoint? Are you trying to work it sort of backwards?
Well, listen, the people who work for corporations are, you know, like me and you and your listeners. I mean, most people want to do the right thing. And most people, whether they work for a food corporation or an entertainment corporation or a cosmetics company or You know, any enterprise, they want to do the right thing. And once they are themselves more alert to the needs of animals, to the feelings of animals, they want to do better. And that's reinforced when you then are paying attention to your consumer base and they want you to do the right thing. It just becomes an easy sort of decision. I mean, I'm essentially arguing in the humane economy that there's a rising tide of consciousness about animals and that we now have a new cultural environment when it comes to our relationship with animals. It's no longer acceptable to mistreat animals. You know, in 2014, South Dakota became the 50th state to have felony level penalties for malicious cruelty. In the last 25 years, we've methodically moved state by state to increase protections for animals. And we're seeing protections in all different sectors of the economy. You know, it's not just malicious acts of cruelty we want to stop. We want to stop institutionalized cruelty, things that we don't even think of. Animals on factory farms, it's legal, so it's not a problem of a crime, but it's still a moral problem when you're immobilizing animals. And corporations are now recognizing that, hey, that's where the vast majority of people are, so we better get on board as well. Now, it's not just a single dimension decision. It's going to be an issue of continuous improvement as we learn more about animals and as we really harness human creativity and ingenuity. You know, this is the thing about SeaWorld. When they say, okay, we're going to stop using orcas over time, they're developing roller coasters, they're developing other entertainment activities that are going to be tremendously stimulating. You know, Las Vegas used to be a town that had all sorts of animal acts. They had Siegfried and Roy with the white tigers. They had all sorts of other animal acts. Now they've got like 9 or 10 different Cirque du Soleil shows. No animals are used at all. And people feel like they're getting better entertainment than ever. We human beings have so much creativity that we can figure this out.
Where do you think the greatest efforts need to be made to move towards a more humane economy? You mentioned factory farms. I know there's probably a lot there that needs to be done. Are there other things that are on the horizon for both the Humane Society of the United States and animal welfare advocates in general?
I mean, the big uses are use of animals for food, use of animals in science, use of animals in entertainment, use of animals in wildlife management. I mean, Wisconsin's got a number of big issues over the treatment of wolves. You know, we now know so much about wolves in terms of their positive impact on the ecology of habitats. You know, where wolves are, there's very little evidence of any chronic wasting disease because the wolves take care of the sick and the particularly young and the old, and they strengthen the health of a herd. You know, and now we can have tourism that's built around watching wolves or just hiking in ecosystems that wolves inhabit. And I think, you know, this whole issue of African nations and protecting elephants and protecting lions, you know, these are the greatest resources that these African nations have. If we liquidate these species, we kill elephants for their ivories or we kill lions for their heads, we take these animals out of these ecosystems. We deny these African countries the opportunity to drive millions, tens of millions of people to be tourists, to spend their money in these areas. That tourism economy is tremendously important all over the world, protecting whales, protecting seals, protecting sea turtles, protecting elephants. I mean, tourism is one of the biggest industries on the face of the planet. We've got to protect the living capital. Fashion, you know, if you're making coats, there's no reason to kill animals for fur these days. We have synthetic garments, we have natural fiber garments that, if we want, can absolutely mirror all of the qualities of fur without killing a single animal. I think really the combination of moral intentionality and human creativity can allow us to get past the era of exploiting animals routinely for food and for science and for wildlife management and fashion. Really, that's what my book is about, that we can still have agriculture but not have factory farming. We can have science, but we don't need to poison animals in a laboratory. We can still have wildlife management, but we don't need to have headhunting expeditions for African lions or wolves here in Wisconsin or in the Upper Great Lakes.
And you can still eat meat and feel that you aren't exploiting an animal. I think that's part of it, too. I think a lot of people would listen to this conversation and say, but I like my steak.
Well, you know, there's pluralism here. You can procure animal products from farmers who are raising the animals more humanely, having them outside and on pasture and giving them a decent life. You know, the head of our National Agriculture Council at the Humane Society of the United States, he's a a rancher from central Nebraska, he has 1,200 cattle. He says his goal is to make sure that the animals on his farm have only one bad day in their life, that he wants to make sure that they have a decent quality of life every day before they're slaughtered. You know, if that's where you land as a consumer, great. We also want to encourage people to eat more plant-based options. I mean, we're raising 9 billion animals for food. The average American eats 30 animals per year. That's too many. You know, we cannot sustainably and humanely raise that many animals. So we can sample the thousands of plants and we can make great foods. We have facsimiles for now pork and beef and so many different products in the marketplace that we never had before. So you can still have that taste and texture. You can get all the protein, none of the downsides with antibiotics or hormones or high fat and cholesterol. We have options that we never had, but you don't have to be a vegetarian to be an animal advocate. You can make simple choices in your life, choosing to get an animal from a rescue or a shelter, eating lower on the food chain or eating more humanely produced products, buying cosmetics not tested on animals. These are simple things that we can do, simple choices that we can make that can improve the lives of billions of animals.
Wayne Pacelli is president of the Humane Society of the United States. His new book is The Humane Economy, Animal Protection 2.0, How Innovators and Enlightened Consumers Are Transforming the Lives of Animals. He'll talk about it tonight at Boswell Book Company, and there's more information at WUWM.com.